No, it doesn't have to be that abrupt. It's a subtle drag. It's a drag it, listen. Oh, drag it back up a little bit. Listen. Oh, just tweak it a little. Ah, there it is. Perfect. I think you're making it harder than it has to be.
Hello and welcome to the Ritual Misery Podcast, episode Beta 52 for Friday, the 9th of October, 2015. This is the show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm screwing this up today. Did it great last week. Fuck it. And that's Kent.
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, of course you screwed it up, man. You can only get it right once for like every five shows.
Every 50 episodes.
It's all good, man. That's why we're still in beta, so, you know.
Yeah. Perpetual beta. Got it. Fucking for Google and shit. Man, how has your week been, dude? You went back to work this week.
I did, man. I'm fucking employed now. I'm not unemployed anymore.
Oh, how does that feel? Feels shitty. Yeah.
It's kind of the epitome of mixed emotions, because you know I'm working and that's great and I have an income and I feel like I'm contributing, but then I don't feel that way because, well, I got to get up in the morning, I got to dress myself. And this is the number one thing that I don't like about my new job.
So basically, you're saying if your mom was still alive and she could do that shit for you, you'd be good to go.
You're damn right. But this is the number one thing that I don't like about my new job is I have to pick out my fucking clothes every day. I do not like that. I've been spoiled for the last two decades. When I go to work, gosh, I know exactly what I'm putting on, how I'm putting it on. Now it's like, oh shit, does this match these pants? Which shoes should I wear? Should I put a tie on with this? Oh my god, like I can only see like three colors because I have a penis. So I don't know like all of these fashion, you know, what goes with what. Like to me, like brown matches brown, right? But apparently brown doesn't match brown. Black matches black, right? But I guess that's not the case. I don't know. Like this is going to take me some time to figure all this out.
So. See, it goes like this, man. I've been wearing the same damn outfit for 2 weeks longer than you did, plus some, because I'm still wearing it.
Right.
I'm tired of wearing it. And unlike you, I'm not going to make the sexist remark about being a penis-holding non-fashionista. So, instead, I'm just going to say that I don't give a damn. Like, I'm just going to throw some pants on and a shirt on and go for it. You know what I mean? Like, it matters so little to me what matches and what doesn't that I just don't care. You know, if I want to wear a blue shirt with a red tie and green pants, that's my prerogative.
Does that work? I don't even know.
I have no idea, but I'm guessing it doesn't because there's primary and alternate colors there, or secondary colors. So I'm guessing that's not going to be
something that flies. You just lost me. I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
That's right. You never even took art class, did you?
Not since like seventh grade.
You're like color wheel. What? There's a color wheel of colors. Yeah. See.
Kinda.
I know it takes a whole lot more white to mix in with the color to get a decent result than it does black. Like two drops of black and anything that you want to use is black. But it takes like 4 gallons of white with two drops of color just to get a decent lighter shade of that color. I remember that very distinctly. It used to piss me off. Oh, man. All right, so you're going back to work. You'll find out what that major, big, huge paycheck is later on.
Yeah.
The massive paycheck that probably isn't as massive as you're hoping, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, I've kind of figured that out. Actually, I don't think it's going to be as big as I thought, but I should be making about the same as what I was making before. Mm-hmm. But since I'm also making retirement pay, it's still sort of a pay bump.
Yeah,
if you combine the two, so yeah, I'm not going to complain.
I do have a question for you, and I fully understand if you don't want to talk about it. Whatever. But did you ever find out what your VA, like your percentage and all that shit is?
Oh, that's a whole other show. If you want to talk about the Veterans Administration. To answer your question, no. No, I have not.
Oh, my gosh. Really? Like, it's still up in the air?
Yeah. I don't expect to get much because I am perfectly physically capable of performing whatever, pretty much whatever job that I could have done when I was 20.
Yeah.
So,
that makes
not
one
expecting
of us.
Much, but... Yeah. Anyway, like I said, another show. We'll have a. It might not even be a Ritual Misery show, because the things that I have to say about the Veterans Administration might not be suitable for
this audience.
Yes. Or any, perhaps.
Maybe the RMP offshoot show.
In fact, I might just record an hour long rant all by myself, and then not show it to anybody.
Just a vent.
I'll call
Holy
it therapy.
Shit. yeah. All right, man. Well, if you have a problem with the VA, you can just write your congressman. What's that about?
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. You know, okay. So I did write my congressman. I guess it was about a week ago or a little less than a week ago. Something that I've talked about doing before, and I might have done it long time ago, like two decades mm-hmm, ago mm-hmm. or something. But I can't really recall the results of it or whatever. Well, anyway, so there was something going on recently that I kind of felt strongly about, and I wanted my legislators to know how I felt about it. So I wrote both of my senators and
First of all, your legal residence is in what state?
New Mexico now.
Okay, because I'm just asking because it matters, you know?
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, so I wrote my two senators and my congressman.
Mm-hmm.
Took me about 3 minutes on Google to figure out who all of those people were and how to get in contact with them. So I wrote basically the same letter to each of them. And today...
You changed the names, right?
Well, I'm not going to get into what I communicated to them, because that's not the kind of show this is. So the names may or may not have been changed. No, but today I got a response from one of my senators and from my congressman.
Okay.
And I thought it was pretty cool. Still waiting on the other senator's response. I don't know what's taking him so long. But it's really interesting because when I got my New Mexico driver's license, one of the things that they ask you is, would you like to register to vote? Sure. I haven't been a registered voter in several years now. I was like, yeah, I do. I do want to register to vote. So I registered, and it kind of got me thinking, okay, now, like, I'm a registered voter. I have a voice now again. I know that's kind of a mirage, I guess, a kind of a false sense.
I'm trying very hard to keep my mouth shut on the subject right now. Continue your story, please.
Right, but anyway, for the purpose of this conversation, I felt empowered to speak my mind, because when you speak to your appointed representatives and you're not a registered voter, it's kind of like, well, who the hell are you? Like,
it's like kind of like bitching at the manager at Chili's and you've never been to a Chili's.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it kind of got me back into the mindset of I guess participation in our democracy, so
Republic. Yes. Okay.
Right. So, but anyway, I thought it was pretty cool because I got two very different responses. The congressman, had to make sure I got this right. My representative basically said, I completely disagree with you, so eat a dick, and change your fucking mind. But thanks for writing me. And then, but my senator, one of my senators, the one that wrote me back, was like, hey, you know, you raised some good points. Here's how I have voted in the past on similar topics. I kind of feel the way you do. Here's my stance on it, and here's the things that I intend to do in the future about this subject. And I really liked his response, especially since I had just finished reading my representative's response, which was, I'm paraphrasing. He didn't actually say eat a dick, but that's basically what he was actually saying.
Nice.
And I don't know. It's just kind of, it got me thinking. I'm going to write both of them back. If nothing else, it's an interesting exchange experiment. Now, if nothing else,
were they form letters?
I think both of them sent me about 80 to 90% form letter.
Okay,
but they both addressed specific things that I said. But you can tell that the vast majority of their letters were like, oh, you chose this topic, because whenever you go to their websites and you mm-hmm. write them, there's a drop down and you have to choose what it is you're writing about. So I'm pretty sure they get an auto response thing and then they like add their own comments if they want to.
Right.
And I think that's what both of them did.
They or secretary.
Very canned, except for two or three sentences each.
Hmm. Well, hopefully you the best of luck in letting the super rich people that supposedly work for you help you with your issue that they supposedly right. are supposed to care about and stuff.
Right.
That's my political spiel.
So, so how's your week?
Other than being extremely busy, working 12 to 14 hours a day and all that kind of stuff this week, next week, and probably the week after, you know, pretty boring. You don't really get to do a whole lot. I've been struggling to keep up on my regular podcast just because where I'm working, I can't take my phone or anything else with me. but I did want to note, you know, you had in the show notes about the writing your congressman or whatever. I wanted to state that Colonel Bob Starr, the Dyess Air Force Base commander, has decided to resign his commission and go for a congressional bid himself.
Wow.
Now, of course, I don't know if that's I don't know how impactful that actually is or what drove the decision, but I thought it was very, very interesting considering as many people as I know that don't really like the direction of the Air Force in general that it's going. Servicemen, I really don't care what civilians think about the Air Force because they're not living it. I kind of almost care what dependents think. I mean, they have somewhat of a voice, but mostly it just echoes what their spouse says. So,
right, right.
Meanwhile, I've noticed a lot of, I don't even know what the word is, like, anger and frustration for the direction the Air Force is going right now. The softening of it's just become too soft. It's all about the wrong things and not about the right things anymore. Of course, that's all opinion, and I understand that there's a bias. The people that feel the same way I do are going to be more likely to talk to me about it. So, you know, my results are skewed and your results may vary. However, I thought it was very interesting that a full-star colonel, the last two people in his position have gone on to be generals. And he has decided to forego that possibility in order to run for Congress.
Hmm.
So, and I don't know if it's aimed at money or if it's aimed at genuine, you know, political desire or whatever, but either way, I think it's very interesting to see things like that going on.
Right, right. Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Now, that being said... Hmm?
No, go ahead. I was going to make
that being said, I did not do anything particularly geeky this week. I sat and read... Well, I guess maybe if you're a military geek, it's kind of geeky. I sat and read a bunch of documents that I can't share with anybody that really interesting as far as military positions go, plans and operations, things like that. It was pretty interesting. But other than that, I mean, I can't really talk about it. So
right, yeah, that is pretty geeky though. And
would you?
Yeah,
I'll be honest. I geeked out about the first day of digging in there. You know, anytime you're digging into certain types of documents, it's kind of fun and interesting. And then you realize it's 1,300 pages long, and you're like, oh. So,
yep.
There's that.
So, yeah, my geeky thing, have you ever watched Gotham?
I have not.
It's really cool. It's on Netflix now. You know me. I grew up as a comic book geek, and in particular, a Batman geek.
Right.
And I'm not saying I like everything about Batman, or you know, especially the media takes on Batman over the years, but I do pay attention. I do like Batman, and this show is so cool, man. If you have any interest whatsoever, even the most mild interest in the Batman mythos, you gotta watch this. This is in my opinion, this is must see TV for anyone even slightly interested in Batman.
Okay, so let me ask a few questions about it.
Yeah.
Is Bruce Wayne Batman?
In the show?
Yeah.
No, he's like 12.
Oh, see, I'm already jacked up. Like it's already throwing my world for a loop. Is he at least sarcastic?
Occasionally.
Does he sound like Michael Keaton?
Not particularly.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm half in, half out. Does he run around in the cape with a little thing over his eyes?
Not yet.
So there's a promise that it may happen. Okay. All right.
There's a possibility. I don't know. I've
yeah.
Not even halfway through the series.
Yeah. Well. Okay. All right. Like I don't even know where to go from there. Like I'm still wondering. Like why is he not running around in a voice? You know.
Well, he might be. That might be happening like off screen.
Oh,
Alfred's chasing him around and telling him to knock that shit off.
That puts a weird connotation on it. But
no, but it's really cool, man. I recommend it to any kind of comic book nerd or anybody that even, like I said, it gives even half a shit about the Batman mythos. Check it out.
Got it. What is Kevin Smith's involvement with the series?
Kevin Smith?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware that he had any involvement. He might have written an episode or guest directed.
So it's possible that that he was involved. Okay.
Maybe. I really don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I just these are the questions that I wonder every time I hear anything about Batman.
Yeah, I know Kevin Smith is a huge Batman fan.
Yeah, and he's done quite a bit of writing work for the series. Both comics and movies. So I didn't know if he was involved in this project or not. So either way, and if you'd like to hear more about that, listen to Fat Man on Batman. It's an entire podcast about his unadulterated love for the character.
Right.
It's just weird, but okay. So, all right, man. Well, the lightning outside is going crazy, and I hope you can't hear too much of it on my mic, but it's well, of course you can't hear the lightning, you fuck. But maybe not the thunder.
Well, I haven't heard any yet, so.
Okay. Well, I have. In fact, so this is how I knew we were going to have lightning and thunder today. I was sitting there during the pre-show before you got on and checking my sound, and in my monitor, I could hear the loud voice system on the bass. So I took my headphones off and I couldn't hear it anymore. So I had to open the window. So my microphone was picking up the loud voice, either the signal, which is really random and that'd be weird, or the gain was just high enough to I could hear it through there, but not through my normal hearing.
Yeah. I think it was your gain. Because yeah, you have the same microphone that I do, and this thing has some sick-ass gain. If you turn that gain way up, you can hear crickets fucking three blocks away.
Exactly what sound do crickets fucking make?
I'll record it next time. It's awful. It's awful.
I can, like, what if you have one of them as a silent partner, so the other one's just going crazy, and the female cricket's like, just shut up.
Oh, my God. Oh, this conversation is taking a turn.
this is kind of where my mindset's at, you know? Or you know, is it like only one gender of cricket that makes the noise, so then the other one's always the silent one? Is it like always the females that make the noise because they're trying to attract the mates, and then they finally get there, and does the female then like stop making the noise, or does she start rubbing her legs on him, making even more noise? You know, is it like a built-in vibration sequence there? Like, what's going on?
That would like be maybe an interesting science.
Maybe he's whispering. Maybe he's whispering sweet nothings in her ear. You know, mounts up on top and just whispering in her ear, and she just gets all crazy and starts kicking them legs, huh? How much different would cricket sex sound from cricket rape?
Ooh,
just saying. I mean, would she be like lunging her legs out and trying to get away, and it'd be making the same sound? Would it be a different pitch? Would there be like more of a rhythm to it or less of a rhythm? I mean, these are the hard questions that I have to consider every time I'm taking a shit and you bring up cricket fucking.
Right.
Okay?
Well, you're not taking a shit right now, are you?
Well, no.
Oh, okay.
No, but I'm going to later. It's one of those things that I do like every day.
Right.
You know?
Especially
and these thoughts
Dr.
are going to go into my head. Like, I don't know why you would bring up cricket fucking. Like, that's just... Now I'm obsessed with cricket fucking.
Oh, shit. It's totally a Google man. Search away.
I wonder if that's on there. Like, of all things in the world, cricket fucking.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
I'm going to find out. I'm going to find out right now here, live on the air, cricket fucking. Now, I'm not going to do anything special. I'm not going to be, like, you know, changing words around or anything. I'm just going to type in cricket fucking.
That's one of the rules of the internet.
I found fucking cricket, stupid fucking cricket, cricket fielding, fuck cricket wireless, I fucking hate cricket, hot little chubby cricket gets fucked.
There you go. That's the one.
Show how fucked up this cricket RN drugs on Reddit. I love this. No fucking auto video on Crick Info now.
That Google took like some liberties with your search term.
That's like a whole day of just anger and hatred right there, apparently.
Which is what a good porn session is anyway.
Okay, so nobody likes cricket fucking, you know what I mean? There's only one guy of cricket fucking out there that's just really a fan, and that's just, maybe you have to go on the dark web for some shit like that, right. You know what I mean?
Right. Speaking of which.
All right, it is time for our TED Talks for the week, and we both actually watched some. I watched one suggested by our good friend Sean, How the Mysterious Dark Net is Going Mainstream by Jamie Bartlett. Yeah, I'm not going to get too much into it. If you're interested in doing anonymous stuff online or how keeping government tracking away from all the stuff that you're doing, you might want to listen to it or watch it. It's actually fairly entertaining and very educational. Some of the key points, you can only access it using an Onion browser, which if you don't know what that is, that's a whole other conversation developed by the Navy and everything else. It's a completely different conversation. But it's essentially completely private. They've found ways to buy and sell drugs and everything else on their normal services. You've even got normal news sites and Facebook going to the dark web to have anonymous services. And that's the key to it. It's all anonymous. They've even found a way to anonymize Bitcoin so that people can't track your Bitcoins. Yeah, because you can track Bitcoins if you dig deep enough, but they found a way to enter the Bitcoins into a pool and then pay out separately. So in order to even further further obfuscate your Bitcoin transactions when you're buying drugs or, you know, hookers and blow or whatever you're going to be buying.
Oh my gosh. Or cricket but when porn.
Cricket porn. Cricket porn on the dark web. There you go. That's title. But one of the things that I found very interesting was these websites, they are all based on, you know, the buying and selling things, but it's unfettered. So the people that are selling things are actually really good at selling them. They've got great customer service. They've got great reviews. He said that 95% of the sites that he reviewed had 5-star reviews. And the point is that if you take out all of the social impact on it and you just go with the transaction, it behooves them to give the best service possible because they want to build a name for themselves so that more people come to them.
Right.
And the same thing with the websites. The more you learn about it, the more interesting it is. The more you'll go, the more you go, the more it gets out, the people learn about it, and the more interested they are. So it's this continuous circle of development. And essentially what Jamie Bartlett comes to the conclusion of is the dark web is where the web is going to go. In the 60s, it was developed by DARPA. Completely a military thing for the internet anyway. The 70s, it became a education platform. The 80s, it became a web platform where average people could use it. The 90s brought in the graphics and the commercialization of it. The 2000s were all about social networks and social presence online. The 2010s, where's it going to go from there? One of the possibilities, the dark web.
Okay. So just everything that we have now, just anonymous.
Just, yeah. As anonymous as possible. And in fact, they're continually finding better ways to make it anonymous.
Which kind of defeats the purpose of social networking.
Not really. Just because you don't know a person in real life, face to face, and there's the corporeal form behind it, doesn't mean that you can't associate with the username and still get results.
Well, no. Yes, absolutely.
The hackerspace has been working that way for decades.
No. I understand that. But the other use of social media is the people that you meet in real life, you connect with on a social network so that when, you know, you move to another place or whatever, you keep contact.
Right.
So the anonymity kind of defeats that purpose is what I meant.
Well, it would, but it would excel in other ways. And just because your alias is anonymous that can't be tracked back to you doesn't mean that you can't share it.
Ah, okay, right.
So there's that. Anyway, I recommend it. It's one of the longer ones. You know, they got the 18-minute time limit. It's 17 minutes of it. So, right. But it's full of information. It's fairly funny. I found it very interesting. And you had one that was also very interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was what was her name? Ellen Jorgensen. She is a scientist that is into biohacking. And if you don't know what biohacking is, that's basically taking our biological makeup and tweaking it in some way. Not necessarily just humans, but it could be anything, any animal or plant. Any biological organism, and then finding a way to tweak it,
right?
And
or simply using it for discovery.
Sure, right. Yeah, precisely, exactly. And the name of her talk was biohacking. You can do it too. So anyway,
I just biohacked myself into a dog.
You did. You absolutely did. And for those of you not watching, yes, he absolutely just turned himself into a dog. Okay, dog. So Ellen Jorgensen's talk, she was talking about do-it-yourself or DIY biohacking. When we think about biotech or bioengineering or anything like that, we think of the old man in the white lab coat in a lab doing these high-level experiments, either government funded or working for a university or something like that.
Right.
Why does it got to be like that? Why can't we do it? Why can't you do it? Me.
The same reason you have no fashion sense, because you have a penis.
Well, well, aside from that, there's a movement now for the DIY biohackers, and it's becoming a thing, and she's one of the pioneers of it. She could be working for one of these, you know, pharmaceuticals or a university or some government-funded project and be making a lot of money doing her thing, but instead she's organizing do-it-yourselfers and setting up basically like public labs, so people can, just regular ordinary people can come and learn about biohacking and then come up with their own experiments.
Which essentially biohacking is small scale bioengineering.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
It's the DIY movement of bioengineering. It's taking things that you can do at home with well, not necessarily at home, but at least in the private sector, at low cost, and learning from them and finding new ways to innovate with it.
Right, exactly. One example that she gives is there was a guy that went to her lab, and he was upset about a dog that he could never catch was leaving
packages,
his stuff in his yard, and he could never figure out whose dog was doing this. So what he did was he took a sample of the feces from his yard, and then he went around to all the different dogs in the neighborhood, and he had a tennis ball, and he would throw a tennis ball, and when the dog would bring it back, he would take a saliva sample. So he had, like, I don't know, 10 dogs or something in the neighborhood that he had saliva samples for, and he figured out through the DNA which dog it was, and he confronted the owner, and he didn't have the problem anymore.
Which, I have to admit that biohacking the dog's poop and saliva, while they're probably pretty close to the same thing since dogs lick their ass all the time, is much better alternative and much more humane than, say, taking out the paint gun marker and blasting every dog that comes in your yard.
Right. I would say yes.
I'm not saying I know someone who did that, but I may know someone who did something very similar to that back in the day.
I would recommend against that.
I would recommend against those actions. Right. Biohack his poop instead. Right.
Exactly. No, but it's a pretty interesting talk. I recommend it. Thumbs up.
I found it very interesting, especially the common everyday applications. I'm not saying I couldn't have thought of them, but I hadn't thought of them. And you know, it's always interesting to see new ways to solve everyday problems. You know, the most mundane problems, like having a dog crap in your yard. You know, it just things like that. It's like, yes, that's something you can do, and if you can do it at low cost with other people, and you're learning from it. You know, learning how DNA markers work and everything else. How does that not benefit everybody? So,
exactly, because, you know, normally these high scale or large scale whatever science projects, especially with government funding or whatever, there's always a what's in it for us thing,
right?
Like how can we monetize this, or how is this going to fix whatever the political hot topic is, or whatever.
Yeah, how's it going to give us a competitive advantage?
Right. So you have a team of like 30 or 40 scientists working on this one project. But what if we have several million everyday people working on everything?
Right.
Yeah. I definitely see this as a win.
I especially like the fact that she went into detail to express that they are not developing things bugs and viruses and things like that, because that's not biohacking. That's
bioterrorism.
Bioterrorism, yeah.
Right.
So They have come up with a common set of rules for it, and it's just like the hacking back in the day, the computer hacking back in the day, that they're getting into the weeds of exactly how is this going to work and what lines can be crossed and all that kind of thing. So very exciting.
Yep, it's very cool.
All right, man. Hey, so Windows this week had a huge announcement. Huge announcement.
They did.
Did you actually watch the whole thing?
I didn't. I only read notes after the fact. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I'm even getting to the point where I don't even know if I can watch the next Apple announcement. Who's kidding? You know I am. So, but they're taking this this turn. Okay, so Apple did theirs, and everybody made the comment, "Oh my gosh, it's so long," and they're getting too much into the weeds and the design aspect of it and everything else. Of course, that's what Apple's about,
right?
And then Google did it, and now Microsoft has done it. And Google and Microsoft basically crammed everything they possibly could in the shortest amount of time, and they didn't get into the design weeds aspect of it. They just kind of said, "Okay, here's how it works, and this is what it does," and go. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the very interesting aspects of this. However, there were several announcements during this Windows announcement that really set the bar as far as like where Windows is going and showed the path that Windows is going to be going down for a while. So what were your favorite things, man?
By far, my number one favorite thing from the announcement is the Surface Book. So a few weeks ago, or probably about a month ago now, Apple announced the iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The biggest problem that I have with the iPad Pro, as needed as it is that it's still going to run iOS with no option of running OS 10. If I'm working on a laptop, I'm sorry, I want the full-blown OS. I want OS 10.
Right.
iPad Pro is pretty neat and all, but I'm not buying one.
Right.
Well, Microsoft came out with basically, you could even say it's their answer to the iPad Pro in the Surface Book. It's a full scale laptop that converts into a tablet. When I say full scale, I mean like in capability. It's a very light, basically like iPad sized. It's got the really light, small keyboard that folds back on itself and becomes basically like a cover for the tablet form of the device. And the beautiful thing about it is that it runs the full OS. It runs Windows 10. It's not running some mobile version which interestingly enough, the Windows phone runs a full version of Windows 10 as well. I don't know how well that works on a phone, but on a laptop environment, I want the full OS.
Right.
And in my opinion, if I was given the choice, as much as I am an Apple guy, if I was given the choice between getting an iPad Pro and getting a Surface Book, I'm going Surface Book.
Yeah.
I'm digging it. I like it. And another thing that I really dig about this announcement is that Microsoft is going into the OEM game. They're making their own hardware.
Yeah,
because if you wanted a Windows PC before now, or actually even now, if you want a Windows PC right now, you got to go through Dell or HP or whoever and get their hardware with Windows pre-installed on it. And the problem with that is, I'm not saying that they don't make good hardware, but the problem with that is bloatware.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy an HP laptop,
everybody wants to install their piece of software on there in order to corner whatever market they're in.
Exactly. So whenever I buy a PC laptop, I spend about 2 or 3 days just uninstalling shit and fixing it, basically resetting it to what should have been the factory release.
Right. Now that is being minimized here last several years. That's actually cut down quite a bit, but it's still there.
Right, right. So I'm wondering, when Microsoft is releasing this hardware, are they going to put bloatware on it? Or is it going to be like if you buy a MacBook where it's just got Mac OS programs? Is it just going to have Microsoft programs?
Well, we're going to have to find out when it's released so everybody can actually do a full review.
Right,
so.
Right. Yeah, it's to me it's very interesting, and I'm at a very early stage. I am a fan of the Surface Book.
I like several aspects of it. I like the fact that it is a full scale computer, that it does have an actual, you know, Core i whatever processor in it, Core i5, Core i7 processor in it. I think it's a very innovative design. And this is really the only thing that they announced that I was actually really interested in. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that the monitor itself, when you pull it off, it's got, I can't find it here, but it's got a separate processor that it's not the full scale. It's a scaled down version of it so as to maintain battery life and such, but it's still fully capable and it's still running the full Windows 10 experience. But when you plug it into the keyboard, it's got that Core i processor. It's got an NVIDIA chipset, you know, all that kind of stuff on it. Discrete graphics, all that. I think it's really great. One of the things that really strikes me about it, though, is how much it looks like a MacBook Pro.
Right.
Like, you could misdistinguish these, the Microsoft Surface Book and the Apple MacBook Pro from a distance or in the dark. You could mistake the two.
Right. Well, when a design's good, a design's good.
Yeah.
But the thing where the MacBook Pro is lacking, you can't turn that into a tablet.
You cannot. You cannot flip it over like a Lenovo. You can't pull the screen off. I mean, you could, but it's not going to work.
Right. I don't recommend that.
It doesn't have a touch screen. It doesn't have a stylus. Although they do seem to be comparatively priced. So.
Right. Right.
It'll be interesting to see how Apple responds to this, if they respond directly to it, because this does seem to be a Microsoft attack on the MacBook Air, which is amazingly popular, and the iPad Pro.
Yeah,
it's kind of an attack on both of them, which is fairly interesting in and of itself. I am interested to see how the design goes as far as durability and how long they last before they start breaking. I will not be buying one of these specifically because I still feel that Microsoft is unproven in their hardware department.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And I'm still a little pissed off that it took me 4 Xbox 360s to get one that didn't burn up. So, you know, I do have that bias, but this is very interesting. The Microsoft Surface Book 2 may be my wife's next laptop.
Right.
Not
right,
mine. Right. No, definitely not right. Mine. But it may be my wife's next laptop at my behest. So,
right.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, if it comes out and it's proven really good hardware, yeah, I could see buying one. If Apple came out with an iPad Pro with OS 10 on it, I'm in. But as it stands, if I'm going to get a piece of hardware like that, it's looking like Surface Book at this point.
Now, something to keep in mind, though. I mean, this, it's nice and everything else, but it is literally like 3 or 4 times thicker than an iPad Pro.
Sure.
You know, I mean, just the screen itself is almost the size of an iPad Pro, and then you have the keyboard that's underneath it, so you've got that aspect to it, and then the gap in between the two, because they don't sit exactly flush. So, I mean, there are still some use cases. This may end up being really heavy. I mean, people haven't really gotten their hands on it yet to check how durable it is, to see how the mechanisms work and everything else. So there are still some gray areas here. But, yes, this is extremely interesting, at least in my eyes.
Yep. Agreed.
So, all right, man. Since we're talking about Windows, you've got something in here about the Windows time zone.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, many, many shows ago, you and I had a discussion about time zones. And your disdain for time zones was mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it there. Look into our archives if you want to know what he said about that. But anyway, so I don't know if you heard about this. A few weeks ago, North Korea decided that, you know what, fuck it, we're making our own time zone. Did you hear about this?
No. Well, maybe I did offhandedly, but I was probably really busy with other things having to do with North Korea's being stupid. So it just kind of got washed away.
Right, it just kind of blends in with all the other dumb shit they do.
Yeah, all the stupid.
No, but okay, so
there's a constant flow of stupid flowing down from North Korea.
So a lot of people criticize North Korea for creating their own time zone because they said that, you know what, they're just trying to be assholes and whatever. Because before, they were on the same time zone as South Korea and Japan.
Right.
But the reason that they're on that time zone is because when Japan took them over, what, you know, back in the Imperial Dynasty days of Japan, they forced their time zone onto the Koreas, you know, along with everything else that they forced on them.
Right.
So what North Korea is doing is going back to the pre-Japanese imperialist time zone that they had.
Okay.
Take it for whatever it is. But anyway, so what's really pissing people off about it is that it's offset by 30 minutes.
Yeah, like Afghanistan.
Right, exactly.
Fucking stupid.
That was the most annoying thing. Stupid. When I was deployed to Afghanistan for 5 months or 5.5 months or whatever that was the most annoying thing ever, was trying to, okay, is it a half hour this way or half hour? Yeah,
so,
it's awful.
So the time zone pissed you off so bad, you're willing to list that above being shelled and being locked down to base because everyone outside the wire wanted to hurt you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, see, Iraq was way worse than Afghanistan. So Afghanistan seemed like a fucking picnic after Iraq. So we only got attacked like once a week as opposed to like several times a day.
Yeah, yeah, there's that. There's
that. But yeah, so anyway, so well, Windows update coming on October 20th is going to have the new North Korea time zone. And I'm just wondering,
how do you get an entire nation? I understand there's only, you know, like 50 million people or whatever people living there, but how do you get an entire country to change their time by half an hour? Like, that's got to piss some people off. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I mean, it's got to be.
I guess they really don't have a choice there.
Switching
though
for daylight savings. I mean, that pisses you off. It pisses me off. It pisses a lot of people off when
fucking
we have to
retarded.
Change the clocks. This is a one-time deal. Change it once. You never have to think of it again. You know.
Let's just get all 7.5 billion people in the world to change their clocks to GMT and call it a fucking day. That's all I'm saying. Then you don't all have right. to change anything ever again. It just stays the same forever. It's always the same.
Right. Go into our archives and
assholes.
Hear more about this. No, but I'm wondering though. So Microsoft is making taking the step to put this time zone into their OS. Who's gonna be using that time zone?
Right, right. Well, there is that. that's actually a really good fucking question. So I'm gonna take that one step further and suggest that perhaps Apple won't do it at all because the entirety of North Korea couldn't afford a Mac. I can see four or five cities all putting their money in to buy like a Mac Mini and then not realizing it didn't come with a monitor. And be like, oh shit. So they got a petition to the next town over to gather their pennies up so they could fucking, you know, order the monitor part. It'd be amazing. Hello?
Yeah, 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 I'm here. You tweaked out for a second.
I am currently on generator power because the lightning has apparently struck out and blasted my dorm. So I can hear the generators running outside. It sounds really crappy. Hopefully it doesn't bleed through. But yes, this is one of the lovely aspects of living overseas and living on base. So
right, right. Yep.
Go my team.
Well, the only episode of RMP where somebody had to do the show in blackout conditions was actually, that took place in the States.
In the States, on base, during a lightning storm.
Oh, true. That is true. But it wasn't overseas, so.
No. At least this time I have a generator to back up the dorm. Jeez, so stupid. All right, real quick thing. I just wanted to mention this real quick. I just listened to the Nerdist podcast episode, both of them, where Neil deGrasse Tyson was on. And this dude, the more I hear from him, the more impressed I am, not just with his knowledge of astrophysics. Of course, he isn't an astrophysicist. He's the director of, some museum. I can't remember. But he, the way that he holds himself online, the way he maintains an online presence, and the fact that he doesn't get attacked nearly as much as, like, say, Bill Nye, the science guy, or, you know, many atheist groups and things like that, people just kind of leave him alone for the most part. I mean, the most controversial thing that he did was a revamp of Carl Sagan's
Cosmos.
Yeah. And he was attacked on that a little bit because he did put a couple of remarks in there that were anti-religious. But this is, I mean, they asked how, you know, it was asked, how exactly does he maintain such a fluid online social presence without being attacked all the time? And he said one thing that I found completely astounding that I would never be able to subscribe to as much as I wanted. He said he never states opinion. He only states facts.
Ah.
So therefore, you can't argue with what he's saying, because anytime he says it, you're arguing with science.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, and that's
a good point. If it is something that comes out that sounds like opinion, he made one quote, and it went something along the lines of, science is an ever... Science is the exploration of the ever-devolving God, or something like that. But the way that he said it, that was taken completely out of context. And if the essence of it, if you read the whole thing, was if God is defined as the logic behind the things we do not understand, then science is the process of devaluing God.
Mm. Right.
Because science is continually trying to explain things that you can't understand. And if God is your reason for all the things that you don't understand in the world, then science is directly against God. So,
right.
And then that, of course, brought into the whole thing. Well, how much spirituality is in what you don't know versus what you can't explain? And that was a whole different conversation that kind of took me down the same path as the current geek episode from last week. And I spent a couple times on the shitter thinking about that, and I'm still not quite sure where I'm at. Being a pronounced Wiccan and almost an atheist, I have this very strange way of thinking in my own mind as far as religion, spirituality, and science go. And I'm not sure my personal balance between those will ever come to a full conclusion. But it's always an ebb and flow versus each other. So I find it very interesting. And listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson, the more I listen to him, the more I just absolutely respect him and appreciate how much he's doing to put forth science in the mainstream, especially these large, extremely large aspect sciences.
Right, the cosmology and astrophysics and stuff like that. Yeah, I've always found him interesting, and not only interesting but entertaining as well.
Yes.
Yeah. He's definitely a good person to watch.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to do. That's all I wanted to share about that one. You can call that our weekly tithe, or you can just call it whatever the hell you want. It's my podcast.
Do what I want.
All right. There have been some more questions on how to support our podcast, and we've mentioned a Patreon. We have a Patreon. We've mentioned our PayPal. Have we mentioned our PayPal? I think we've mentioned our PayPal. We have a PayPal. Go to ritualwizardry.com/support. You can go to use our Amazon link. You can use our iTunes App Store, whatever link. There are a lot of things listed on there, but really what it comes down to, and this is what we need everyone to do. This is no shit. The best way right now for you to support our podcast, share it, tell people about it, go to iTunes and rate it.
That's absolutely
bar none. The best way for you to support us right now is to share it, get the word out there, tell them, hey, there's a couple of geeks on here. And if you're really geeky, they probably want to interview you and talk about random shit with you.
Absolutely.
Especially if you have a specific area of expertise. And rate it on iTunes, because that's how iTunes shares it. And if you can get iTunes to share it, a lot more people are going to find it. And then the second thing beyond that is email us, ritualmiserypodcast@gmail.com. Email us, tell us what you like, what you don't like, and what you want to see more of in the show. This is a show that we're doing not just for Kent and I, but for anybody and everybody that's listening and paying attention. And we want to make this the best show that we can. So share it, tell people about it, rate it on iTunes or Stitcher. It's on Stitcher too, so rate it on Stitcher if you would like. And email us, give us feedback, let us know what you're thinking, how you're thinking, tell us where, if you have ideas about how the show should go, if we're doing something wrong, if we're doing something good. I know we got rid of our ums on some feedback from one each, Mrs. Bonnie Brushwood, an amazing person in and of herself. So let us know. This show will only improve with your feedback and your help. So let us improve this show. Let's make this show the best it can be for us and for you.
Amen, brother.
So there's all that. All right, man. People can find you on Twitter at @RM_DelNoche and on RateBeer. Have you rated any beers lately? I know you just had some home brews.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't rate my home brews on RateBeer unless I could add them and rate it, but then they're just going to take it down. go to ratebeer.com and look up username Del Noche, and you can see the things that I have been rating.
Yeah. How was your homebrew?
Okay. My latest one, the stout, the flavor is fantastic. However, the carbonation did not quite come out the way it should have. It's probably about half carbonated.
Yeah, so it's like flat but tasty.
It's kind of a flat beer. It really is. It tastes delicious, but it's not like you would never sell it. Nobody would buy it. It's too flat.
So do you know what happened with it to make that happen, or is that like just one of those mystery things that you're just gonna try it again and figure it out?
I don't know. I don't know where it went wrong in the process.
All right, good talk. So
the only thing I can think of is that perhaps it was ready to come out of the carboy into the bottles before I actually did it. That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Okay. Well, I know nothing about the subject, so I just like to drink beers. Beers. All right.
Burr. I love beer.
You can find me at Ethan Kane on Twitter. You can follow the show on Twitter at Ritual Misery. Submit ideas on our subreddit. We actually had a few ideas on there, and I forgot to incorporate them this week. So shout out to Margie for putting that in there. And I forgot all about it until we had already started the show. So that's completely on me. And you can email us podcast@ritualmisery.com or ritualmiserypodcast@gmail.com, or pretty much any combination of those will get you somewhere towards us. You can call and leave us a voicemail. That's 567-69-TRMPC, 567-698-7672. And of course, you can find all these links and more ways to support the show and give feedback at our website, ritualmisery.com. Thank you so much to Kevin McLeod for allowing us to use your music. Thank you for listening. For Kent, for me, and for you, this has been your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See ya.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Yeah, you said you didn't hear what I said because I was glitching out. Made a really good joke and it just fucking fell flat. I'll probably have to edit that shit out a little bit.
Yeah, well, what did you say?
I don't remember.
Because I could tell that you said something humorous, and then I was just like, And you're like, well, fuck. That was like the funniest thing I've ever said. And it just fucking fell flat. I was like, oh, no, it was funny, dude. It was great. Oh, shit. That's when I was like, fuck, man. I couldn't hear what you said.